This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands for the super athletic stuff, like running gear for cruising up the trail.
Woo!
And the super athlete-ish stuff, like fishing gear for chilling by the creek. Nice cast. Fitness apparel to push for higher reps. You got this. And golf balls priced so you can afford to lose one. Or a few. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
This episode of the Sportsman's Nation is brought to you by Outdoor Edge and their complete lineup of replaceable blade knives, fixed blade knives, and game processing kits. Now, we've all been there before, trying to field dress your wild game with a dull knife. This is where Outdoor Edge really steps in. With the Razor Safe system, you can have a brand new razor sharp blade with just the push of a button. No more dull blades and no more problems processing your wild game. To check out all of the products from Outdoor Edge, visit OutdoorEdge.com. And at checkout, enter the discount code NATION30, that's NATION30, for 30% off of your purchase. This is the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, brought to you by Vortex Optics. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode, and it's a good one. I have a guest today. His name is Parker McDonald. Now, if you listen to the Sportsman's Nation podcast network, then you know Parker from the Southern Ground Hunting podcast. It's a really popular podcast on the network here. And I'm telling you right now, man, he does a really good job. And the reason I specifically brought him on to the network is because I have no experience in the South. I have never hunted the South. I don't know how to talk about the South or the Southern rut or anything like that. So you got to have a guy in that location in order to properly talk about it. And that's what Parker brings to the table, is his experience hunting the South. He lives in Alabama, and he's hunted Texas and Kentucky and a variety of other different states in the South. But, he does a real good job at talking about hunting the South, and that is why his podcast, I'm talking in circles, and that's why his podcast is called the Southern Ground Hunting Podcast. Now, in this episode, it is a BS session straight up. I'm not going to lie. I think we talk about hunting thermal hubs and thermal zones and wind direction. That's the main topic. But before that, we kind of get into a rant about business and marriage and a variety of other topics kind of that are intertwined in our life. You know, like, hunting is such a big part of our life. Like, I know for me, I don't do anything else. I'm not in a softball league or a bowling league or do fantasy football or anything like that. And I know that Parker is in some way, shape, or form the same way. So we talk about our similarities with, you know, I think we talk a little bit about parenting, our relationship with our wife. We talk about the podcasting as a whole in the hunting space. A little, I guess it's a little bit of a insight into what we do. Yeah, really good podcast. And I'm going to drop really quick commercials here for you guys. So on this particular podcast, the Nine Finger Chronicles, man, I just want to say thank you to all of the companies that have supported this podcast and this network, but especially this podcast, because it's been around. It is what the network was propped up on, and luckily it turned out to be something amazing. So Hunt Stand, right? I'm on Hunt Stand all the time, literally all the time. I am on there scouting new locations, different states. You know, it's one of those things where it's never ending. And for the affordability of Hunt Stand, it is completely there's no other functionality and robust features that match that hunting app. So huntstand.com, go find out more information about that. A discount code SN20 for 20% off. Lone Wolf tree stands, go to Lone Wolf. Some big news coming out of that camp here earlier in this next year. But in the meantime, one of the best Christmas presents you can give yourself or others would be a Lone Wolf tree stand or set of sticks. And that discount code is 9FC21, 9FC21. And that's 50% or $50 off all orders over $200. Wasp broadheads, the bringer of death, the bringer of destruction, and American made. For the most part, a couple of their heads, or a majority of their heads, are American made. I'm a huge fan of the Jackhammer, huge fan of the Boss 4 blade for the fixed blade version. And that discount code for 20% off is the number 9, followed by the word fingers 2021. 9 fingers 2021 and get 20% off. WaspArchery.com, OzonixHunting.com. If you haven't played around with Ozone yet, you definitely need to do it. And you need to do it, you know, borrow one from a buddy, go out hunting, or read up on it. And just, I mean, hell, listen to me and listen to my consistent message about Ozone every single time I talk about it. It is a product that allows the average Joe to have sometimes some second chances in the woods, and definitely needed if your hunting time is limited. So go to ozonixhunting.com, and if you do decide to purchase one of their units, get a free dry wash bag with the purchase of a unit, and that is NFC21. NFC21. And of course, our other partners, they don't have any discount codes, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't go check them out. Vortex Optics, probably the hunting optic, the brand in the hunting space when it comes to optics. Rangefinders, binoculars, spotting scopes, red dots, rifle scopes, vortexoptics.com. They're our title sponsor as well. Exodus Trail Cameras. What do I love about Exodus Trail Cameras? They literally work. Period. That's it. I mean, that's all I want. I want a trail camera to work so that when I collect that data, it's there for me to use. Other cameras in the past, I have not had such good luck. These guys have a 5-year no BS warranty, meaning inside of 5 years, if it breaks, they're gonna hook you up with, I think it's a theft or damage. So if it's broken or if someone steals it, they'll sell you another one for 50% off. And no other trail camera company is doing that. And if you are looking for a crossbow for a new hunter, or someone who is maybe new or resurfacing as a hunter, or you live in a state that has a crossbow season, you definitely need to check out ExcaliburCrossbow.com. Excalibur Crossbows have been around for roughly 30 years, and these guys knock it out of the park with, like, they're not trying to over-engineer the crossbow. They've been around for a long time. They've built a foundation. They're a cornerstone in the archery side of the hunting, and you don't in the hunting space, and you don't stick around that long unless you have a very high quality product, and that's Excalibur. So if you're looking for a crossbow, give Excalibur a a try. Other than that, man, huge shout out to all of you for taking time out of your day to listen. Appreciate it. Now let's get into today's episode with Parker McDonald of the Southern Ground Hunting Podcast. 3, 2, 1. All right. On the phone with me today, my Southern accomplice here at the Sportsman's Nation, Mr. Parker McDonald of the Southern Ground Hunting Podcast. Parker, man, what's up?
What's up, Dan? It's always a pleasure to come on your show and talk a little bit about deer hunting. I think me and you right now are kind of finding ourselves in the same position. We don't really know what to do with ourselves. It's deer season and we can't deer hunt right now.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's a good thing and a bad thing at the same time.
Right, right. I had an opportunity here this week to potentially go back to Nebraska and hunt, like try to fill a Nebraska tag. But just like putting that vibe out in the house and knowing how much work I have to do here with the network, I was just like, yeah, I'm going to pass and maybe I'll roll the dice late season. But, you know, there's still a chance. I don't know how big of a chance it's going to be though.
Well, I like the way you put that. You just throw out that vibe in the house and just see how everybody takes it.
Yeah.
And most of the time it's going to come back negative. when you throw that vibe out there,
right.
And just testing the waters just to right. see. So I shot my last buck here in Alabama this past Monday. So less than a week ago. And that was kind of like, you know, my wife was like praising God whenever I shot the last ones. Yeah. Like finally you can be home for a little bit. And, I want to say it was later that night. I just wanted to just kind of throw it out there and just see what her reaction was. And I was like, so what would you think if I went to Mississippi and caught that late rut here after the new year? And she looked at me and she's like, are you serious right now? For real? No, I was just joking.
Nah, yeah, you know, I yeah just, nah,
I,
man.
I got
you. Got you. That's funny. Yeah, I do that too. And by the way, your wife must be a rock star because one of the first people that I knew, like in my circle that I knew who was hunting was you. Cause you went up to North Dakota in September and you've kind of bounced all over the country and just finished up here. What, this last week in Alabama. And well, you're still not done yet because you might go hunting a little bit more this late season, right?
Yeah, yeah. I started North Dakota September 1st.
Yeah.
From North Dakota went and no, actually that's false. I started in Tennessee for the Tennessee Velvet Hunt.
That's
on
right.
October. I'm sorry, August the 27th.
That's right.
And was unsuccessful there. Went to North Dakota, killed a small deer on public land up there on the last day. Then I'm trying to remember if I hunted Tennessee at all. But yeah, I've been hunting since late August and just finished. And to confirm what you said, my wife is the best. Like we constantly have like friends and stuff. But like, I don't know how you let him do this. And
yeah.
And we have an interesting dynamic, really, because I'm self-employed now, so I can, you know, kind of make my own schedule. But she has been, since we started having kids, she's been a stay-at-home mom.
Yeah.
We had the means to be able to do that. The job I was working at the church, we were living off of one income, and then now being self-employed, we've still been able to do that. And so she works from home, but we also... all of our family lives far away. So my parents live in Texas, her parents live in Florida, and we're kind of like right in the middle here in Alabama. So part of our, I don't want to call it like a deal that we have with each other, because it's definitely not that. It doesn't always work out exactly this way. But because she's a stay-at-home mom and she doesn't have a work schedule necessarily that she has to follow, I'm able to say, hey, I'm going on a trip right here, or can we work it out to where if I go on this trip, you can go and hang out with your family in Florida this week. And then like during the summertime, she'll spend 2 weeks there. She'll take the kids and spend 2 weeks with her family in Florida. You know, and you know, I'm working, I'm at home. And that'll change a little bit now that I'm self-employed and I can work from Florida if I want to.
Yeah.
But I really try to, it really is like, and this would be valuable for young married people that listen, young married dudes that listen to your podcast. You can't, most of the guys that you see that are just going all deer season long, it's because they have developed a bank account system of sorts with their marriage, where they put in deposits. Yep. You have to put in deposits if you ever want to withdraw. So I try to put those deposits in as much as I possibly can, because during turkey season, during deer and turkey season, I like to move around a lot.
Yeah.
And so I'll try to make some sacrifices in those off seasons to where, you know, my wife can go and do the things that she wants, you know, and I've never put pressure on her to get a job. I've never put pressure on her to, to do really, really anything. Like, and she knows that. And I think it's just an interesting dynamic with me and her to be able to go and do stuff like that. But it works. It's worked great. And she is the most supportive person to me chasing the dream of doing anything in the deer hunting world. She is awesome. She's great.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. I spend all off season basically trying to let my wife. So I have all these dreams and accomplishments that I want to, that I want to happen in my life. So in the off season, I want to make sure that my wife knows that, hey, let's go do this. Let's do this. What do you want to do? You know, her dreams are, I'll say this, her dreams and aspirations are a little bit more expensive than mine are. So, so we have to bring a slice of reality into it, but for the most part, it's actually getting better than what it was. Now, you mentioned something there I want to touch base on. And from a marriage standpoint, and man, this goes beyond hunting, but I gotta have a little truth bomb here. There are people out there, that talk to my wife, maybe some of her friends or other acquaintances that she knows, who say things like, man, I can't believe you let your husband go away for 8 days, or I can't believe you let your husband go hunting for however many weeks out of a year. And you look at it and it's really not that much time compared to a whole year, but that doubt, they start to think of it and then they try to use it against you in a argument or like, well, you know, you're pretty lucky. So-and-so would never. And I'm like, I'm not married to that fucker. I'm not married to her. I'm married to you. Right. I don't care what that person has to say. And then, you know, I think with a little bit of reinforcement and education, like I've been able to communicate with my wife and just be like, hey, listen, that's great, but you can't let other people's opinions of your marriage ruin what we have. And yeah, that may sound a little selfish on my part, but she's getting what she wants out of the deal too. So,
here's the reality is, if you're able to make it work and both parties are happy, both you and your wife are happy with the system that you have down, and other people are saying, I just don't know how you do it, that just means you're better at it than they are.
Yeah.
Like you're better at marriage than they are. If they're saying like, I can't imagine that, I can't believe you let him go do that. Well, maybe they need to work on their communication and their marriage a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And the other thing too, is my wife knows this. We may have talked about it too before on a podcast. I feel like I've said it on a podcast before. My wife knows that I will likely, like, she does not ever have to worry about me cheating on her or going outside of our marriage.
Yeah.
I think statistics pretty much speak for themselves about how often that happens within marriages.
Yeah.
She does not have to worry about that. Like, if I tell her I'm gone, it's because I'm going to go hunt or do something around that.
I'm getting away from people.
Yeah. I don't need another woman in my life. That doesn't make life easier.
No, it doesn't.
like it's sometimes difficult enough to have one cycle a month. I couldn't imagine going through two of them. So you don't ever have to worry about me going and doing that.
And I'll just say, we're having this conversation with all due respect to any lady listeners out there.
And that's the thing. Like my wife, I would never say anything negative about her. Yeah. Like she is, like you said, she's a rock star. She's great. She's best mom, best wife.
Yeah.
You know, lets me go chase dreams hard, and I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a system that works for us, and she does have, I think for a little while it was hard. She did not come from a hunting family. So her dad doesn't hunt. Her brother started hunting later in life. So he is a hunter. But she didn't come from it. And so I think it was kind of a culture shock for her that some men just leave for weeks out of the fall and just leave and go hunt and do something fun. But, like for you, I'm sure it probably, this has been more recent for us, but yeah. I'm sure at some point for you, your wife saw a check that came in and you're able to, you know, make a living doing it.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, yeah, go kill some deer.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll be honest, man, it's been a rough road. That's the toughest part of where I'm at now was getting over that. Now I've mentioned this also before in several podcasts, but the girl that I was dating before I met my wife, poor communication on my part, not letting her know how into hunting that I was. And yeah. when the first hunting season came around and every evening or every night or every weekend I was going and trying to get some tree stand time, it was almost like a shock to her. And she's like, well, you don't need to be hunting that much, right? You don't need to be doing that. You know, you got a girlfriend now, you need to hang out with me. And I was like, okay. Long story short, that didn't work out. And I'm not joking when I say this. The first serious conversation, when I had that first little blip in my head of, hey man, I can see myself spend the rest of my life with this woman. I had that conversation with her and I told her straight up, listen, I am an outdoorsman. I am a hunter and I can only hunt this in certain times of year, October, November. I didn't mention September, which is why when I started going out west, that was just, you know, you had to kind of start gradually getting into that. But, and December, I mean, like I'm busy. And so you're going to have to learn how to do some of this stuff with, you know, like be in a relationship. This is going to sound weird. Be in a relationship without me. And, so I had that straight up and at the time it was like, yeah, okay. Yeah, fine. That's awesome. Yeah, whatever. And then the first hunting season came and she rode it out pretty well. Not going to lie. Then we got married. Right. And then the first one was okay. Not so bad. And then kids came. And then that's when the curveball started coming. And I'll be honest with you. Like hunting took a back seat at times, but I was okay with that because I knew that I had additional responsibilities as a father at this point, not just a husband, but as a father as well. So I was able to hunt smarter now. And I'm sorry for hogging this conversation, Parker, but my wife said, my wife said something to me it was last week. She goes, we were talking about the hunting season. I said, man, the hunting season's pretty much over. And she's like, yeah, you know what? It really wasn't that bad this year. And I didn't say it out loud, but I thought into my head and I said, you just gave me a mile of rope on that. I'm going to use it because now I know, like I'm looking for that threshold and I didn't meet it this year, which means that I could probably squeak in maybe another week of hunting somewhere. So selfishly, of course. So
it's funny. You asked me to start a podcast on Sportsman's Nation the first year that my daughter was born.
Okay.
So she was born in 17, I think it was 17.
Yeah.
She's four now. So yeah, she would have been 17. And you It was like you asked me to start the podcast like right after she was born. And so my like whole everything kind of revolving around a potential career and building a brand happened right when we first started having kids. So it was kind of like, it was a little bit opposite for me. Hunting didn't really take a back seat. It kind of took a front seat. Of course, I still, you know, make every chance that I can to be at home and do all that kind of stuff and be with the kids. And I try not to miss anything that the kids have going on. But it did definitely kind of grow into something bigger for me right around the same time we started having kids, which is probably could have saved me and my wife several arguments had I started a little bit earlier.
Right.
I think.
Right.
Cause it was definitely like that. Like I was trying to figure out like what's acceptable, what's not. We had some pretty serious, you know, pretty serious arguments at times. And, but now, you know, I kind of feel like we've found that balance, and also being my own boss really helps, because like today it's Friday. Yesterday, pretty much all this week I've been at home with a child, you know, helping out. And so I've been, I didn't tag out Monday and then immediately have to go back to work. You know, I was at work. I was just working at home, you know? And so that was, that's been pretty cool. That's been a real, that's made this season a lot easier for us.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I can do everything from home, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. And that's crazy. Like the, you know, everybody always says, you know, the best time to do something is right now. Right. Cause I started the network in 17, and that's when my, so I let's see, 2014, I believe, is when I started the, and it seems so long ago, 2014, I think, is when I started the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, and I would have had one kid already. And then another one. I think my other son was born in September or April of 14. And then I had my other son in 17, right around the time he would have been a baby, the time that I started the network. And so there is literally, I just keep thinking about if I was to start right now and how hard it would be to start something. And that's like from a business standpoint, I don't know about you, but for me, I look back and I'm just like, God, I thank God I started all of this when I started all of this, because with the schedule that I have now, it would have been damn near impossible.
Yeah, man. I've thought about that quite a bit. And not only just scheduling, but you know, you kind of helped start the whole hunting podcast scene. I would say you were one of the first ones that I ever listened to. And not only that, you were a co-host on Wired to Hunt, which was a big part of that beginning phases of podcasting and things like that. So, when I came in and you asked me to start, it was probably right at the tail end of times to start a hunting podcast before everybody did it.
Yeah.
Cause I think now if I tried to start a hunting podcast now, it just kind of gets lost in the sea.
Oh yeah.
You know, there's so many of them out there. It's every week somebody's starting a new thing that's exactly like the other thing. And it's, it would be very hard to make yourself make Stand any out. Type of thing for yourself with it.
And that's crazy, man, because there were some podcasts when I started that were pretty, I don't know what the right word is, so I'll just use a simple word, big, back when I started, that are no longer there anymore. And they just, I don't know whether they just said, hey, I'm done, this ran its course, or I don't want to put any energy into it, or hey, it just, I can't find a way to monetize it, or whatever their reason was, it's just not there anymore. And so I think that bubble from an outdoor podcasting standpoint has really, I don't know if it's popped yet, but it's about to, I think that all of a sudden people are going to realize that, say, man, this is a little tougher than I thought it was, especially if I wanted to make money off of it, and turn it into kind of a business. But at the same time, I feel just because I'm in it, that there's been a little bit of a decline. We're coming off of the peak of it.
Yeah. And most people aren't going to be able to do what you've done. So you've been able to pretty well build a podcast as your main platform.
Yeah.
Same with Mark, and a couple of other people that have been able to do this. Working Class Bowhunter probably is one of them that got started at the beginning.
Yep.
There's a few of you guys who are able to make a full-time job out of podcasting. But the reality is for people like me, who I came in at the tail end of it, no doubt, you know, I've been able to do well for myself as far as financially with podcasting and stuff, but I've got to do everything kind of around it. I think for most people, podcasting can't be your main platform that you go with. Like, you have to be, I just did a podcast with Brody Swisher. I don't know if you know Brody, but he's the guy from bowhunting.com, and he does a lot of the editing for them.
Yep.
With the articles and stuff. So I did a podcast with him yesterday, and we were talking about this same thing, kind of like how to get started in the outdoor industry and build a brand. And I think if you're going to be a hunter, if you're going to do a podcast or be a part of the outdoor industry, I think the most important thing that you have to do is be a good hunter, right? Like, because podcasting, like, Dan, how many times have you had the same guest that's been on Working Class Bowhunter, or they've had the same guest that you've had on, or what? Everything is kind of regurgitated, but what people buy into is the host.
Yeah.
And if you as a host if your show is completely dependent on the guest, then I just don't think it's sustainable. But if the people and your listeners come back over and over and over again, they're probably coming back for you.
Yeah.
Because you're a good, credible host. And so I think for me, when I started the podcast, I wanted to make sure that I wasn't building. Now, we have great guests, and I want them to be the focal point of the show. I don't want me to be the focal point, but to be able to keep people coming back, I had to be a credible source as well.
Yeah.
And so my first thing when I started was be a better deer hunter.
Yeah.
Like, I need to be able to have these conversations with some of these guys who I'm interviewing, who are big buck slayers and consistent killers of deer. Specifically public land southern deer is the kind of people that I talk to. So I need to make sure that I am as good as I can possibly be at that aspect. And so I focused a lot of my efforts into that. And I think that for me has been one of the maybe the smartest things that I've ever done, was to focus on that over everything else. Yeah. Be a better deer hunter, be a student of them.
Right.
Same thing with you. My buddy Adam Cruz, I don't know if you know Adam or not, but you killed your buck this year, and your Iowa buck, and he sent a picture of it in a group text with me, him, and Walter Lee from Chasing Tails. And he said, well, Dan killed his annual mature buck. So, like, you've made it an expectation that you're going to go out and you're going to kill a good deer in Iowa every single year. Everybody kind of knows that. And I think that makes you credible.
Yeah.
I don't think it's and I listen to so many podcasts, or I see new podcasts pop up of people that are talking about that. You know, I think the popular thing right now is hunting public land and blah, blah, blah. But they don't have a lot of success. And so if they are pulling in a bunch of guests who are new, you know, everybody's not going to be Andy May. That's just the reality.
Right.
There's one Andy May, and Andy May's been on like every podcast ever because he's good at it.
Yep.
He's good at deer hunting. And so once you've heard Andy May on one podcast, like, to me, and this is nothing against Andy. I think Andy's probably one of the most humble dudes in the world.
Oh, by
far. But when you've heard somebody talk once, you probably aren't going to listen to them on every single podcast they're on after that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. does that kind of make sense? You have to either be really good at finding new people that nobody's ever heard before, or you gotta be the reason why people are listening.
Right.
So that was a long way of explaining that, but
yeah. And the thing about it is, you know, kind of going back to, you know, that comment about how do I say this? Maybe if you're a content provider, yes. Right. As far as a content provider, I have to be somewhat charismatic. A host of a podcast has to be somewhat charismatic. They have to have a reason for, people to come back to it. Right. But I know at the same time, I know there's other podcasts out there where the host is really dry and it works. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's you have to be able to captivate the conversation or make something interesting about it. As far as the deer hunting is concerned, dude, I'm not special in any way, shape or form when it comes to deer hunting, because there's other guys out there, you know this just as well as I do, who are doing exactly what we're doing every single year as well. They're just out of the picture. So we may look like studs, and I'm sure, not trying to be arrogant here. We may look like the top tier of the group in our small circle that we're in, but we are not in any way, shape or form special.
Absolutely.
Because I know hundreds of guys who are doing the exact same thing in the woods that we're doing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And my point is to have these good conversations with people and to really draw out the best content in a podcast, you have to know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Like, and it needs to be credible.
Exactly. Right?
So if I'm saying, so here's one example that I've been focused on this year. I've killed two of my Alabama bucks in a thermal hub and had a lot of encounters with bucks in thermal hubs. And it's something that I haven't really focused on much in the past, but I've been really focusing on, and it's worked out for me. If I didn't know a thermal hub, if I didn't hunt thermal hubs, if I had not had success on thermal hubs, how can I be expected to talk to Aaron Warbritton from THP about what's a thermal hub?
Yeah.
You know, like, why would my listeners have any confidence in me as a host if I didn't have any reference point for the conversation?
Yeah.
And it's definitely possible. I think you can do it and let that person just be educating you in that way. But I think you're going to get the most bang for your buck if you, or no pun intended, you're going to get the best bang for your buck if you know what you're talking about.
Oh, absolutely.
And you have at least an understanding.
And that's in anything in life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
absolutely. You can't be a sportscaster if you don't know anything about sports.
Right.
Fact. You know?
Fact.
I'm not going to say I get annoyed. I don't get annoyed because I think it's fair and good for anybody to try something, to do something new. But I think people get so focused on other things that maybe aren't nearly as important, like gear.
Yeah.
And, you know, talking to, like, I hear a lot of podcasts that the only thing that the people who are hosting know what they're talking about is gear, because they spend so much time focused on gear and not very much time talking about deer, or they don't have much knowledge of actual deer, and they think that's going to like elevate them.
Right.
And it just doesn't.
Right.
It just doesn't.
Yeah.
I don't think it's not sustainable anyways.
Yeah. You're not wrong, man. Let's talk.
And I'm talking to the guy who hosts the
Hunting Gear podcast. Yeah. Right. Well, the host gear talk. Yeah. Well, the gear talk is like all that stuff on that particular podcast is all unbiased, right? Yes, I talk about the gear that I use. Right. But at the same time, I'm bringing in, experts on that specific product line or companies. So it's not coming from someone who's influenced by it. It's actually coming from the brand itself or the product line itself. Yeah. So
that's right.
Yeah.
And I think gear is good.
Yeah.
Like Like, I'm a gear nerd as much as anybody. But yeah, I try not to make that my focus necessarily.
Right.
But like what you're doing with that podcast, you also host 14 other podcasts that are talking about different stuff. I mean, you're just kind of covering you're just throwing a big net out there is what you're doing. And that's smart. All that's just good business to me.
Yeah. So I want to pivot here a second, and I want to talk about this thermal hub thing that you've, you know, been trying to pay a little bit more attention to this year. And for someone who doesn't know what that is, what a thermal hub is, why don't you explain to them what it is?
So the best way that I could explain it without using, I won't even use the terminology of thermals in it, but if you're looking at a map and you see a bunch of ridges, a bunch of points dumping down into one central spot. So let's say you have four different ridges that dump down into a bottom and hit that one central location.
Yeah.
That is a thermal hub. Yeah. So it offers a bunch of different benefits right there. There's a lot of good things about a thermal hub when it comes to deer hunting, because we know this is a subject that's been probably talked about more times than you could ever count, but buck bedding, hill country buck bedding in places where there's steep terrain and any type of terrain, really, you get bucks that bed on these points, right? On these spur ridges or points or something like that. And they typically, what they talk about is they bed with the wind to their back overlooking the bottom, where they get the thermals that are rising up in the day, which is when they're bedded. Thermals rise up from the bottom as the sun heats up and the wind blows over the back. So they get, you know, they get their scent from both directions. So that's one benefit you get. And when you have 3, 4, 5 different of those points that are dumping down into the same area, you've just upped your percentage, you know, 5 times of catching a deer going to bed and on one of those points.
Yeah.
So you have that. You also have, I hunt thermal hubs in the pre-rut and in the rut. And what a lot of people have told me since I've been talking about it and concentrating on it and have had some success on that, I really tried to explain it well in my last video that I did where I killed my first Alabama buck. I tried to explain it more visually in that video because I think it's beneficial. A lot of people have reached out and they said, "Hey, I'm glad you said that. I've been hunting a thermal hub. I've heard people talk about thermal hubs. I never knew what they were. I acted like I knew what they were, and I really didn't have any idea. But I've been hunting a thermal hub my whole life, and that's my best spot." So it's not like a thing that is rare. You can find these. A lot of people have had success in these type of areas, and maybe they just don't know it. But what ends up happening in these hubs like this, it also works the same way inverted. So if you have a ridge that splits off in 5 different directions and basically kind of makes a star, you have a thermal hub that's a higher thermal hub.
Yeah.
What I'm talking about, what I've been concentrating on, is more of that lower end thermal hub, where you're actually hunting in the bottom.
Okay.
And it almost creates a bowl.
Yeah.
If you can imagine that.
Yeah.
So during the rut, what ends up happening is these bucks will dump down into these hubs off of one of the ridges. Usually, from what I've seen, it's going to be the one that's the most gradual that they can easily get to. They're going to go and just cruise every single one of those points. They're just going to go over each and every one of those points, because what the does do is they come down and cross and they go from one ridge to the other in these little hubs. And so they're just scent checking every single one of those points and going around it. And a lot of times those ridges like that in that bowl, it creates kind of a security spot. So if the wind shifts and a buck's bedded on one point, he can easily drop down in there and go to the next point where the wind is better for him.
Yep.
So you catch a lot of that stuff as well. That's more early season type stuff. But in the rut, that's typically what they'll do. They'll dump down in there, usually halfway, somewhere where that thermal tunnel is, where the wind meets the thermals, the rising thermals. And both bucks that I killed on thermal hubs this year was between 9 and 9:30, so right when the thermals start rising.
Yeah.
and they start cruising that.
Right.
And you really have, if you have a bunch of points dumped down, you have that many chances that a buck's going to be on one of those ridges and come that way. Instead of just hunting one ridge or one bench or one saddle, you have, you're doing five times this. You're upping your odds by five times to me.
Yeah.
If you have five ridges come together.
Yeah. So this sounds like a scenario where everything's coming off the top down into a bottom and collecting in one point, and the deer use that one point so they can scent check a ton more surface area of the land just in one spot, right? Especially, especially if they're looking for a doe. Now, with that said, is there the opposite of that, like a spot where there may be a thermal hub for an afternoon hunt where thermals are rising and there's a collection point or like a concentrated point of thermals and wind at the top of the terrain?
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of what I kind of hinted at and talked about it a little bit a minute ago. But like if you have the top of a mountain or the top of a hill and it splits off into, it just kind of looks like a star from a map.
Yep.
Or a clover or something like that, like whether it has five, four, three, however many ridges split off of it, that kind of creates the same effect. But to me, it's just a little less likely.
Yeah.
I don't see it because your thermals are going to happen more on the sides of the hills. That's where a buck's going to get that advantage because he's smelling whatever is at the bottom. It was when those thermals starts rising, he's smelling what's at the bottom.
Right.
From the thermals rising. And then he's also catching the wind coming up over the top. And he just has a lot of options right there that he can check. Now I have found them on tops. I just don't ever hunt ridge tops here. It just, it doesn't seem like deer really travel those in the daylight very much.
Yeah.
Where I'm at now in Kentucky, I hunted a thermal hub that was a higher thermal hub this year. And that's something I don't have nearly, I wouldn't even feel comfortable necessarily talking about it because to me, your thermals, the thermals rise, the wind comes, the wind is going to come up over the top of that and blow any thermal winds away.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yep. Yep.
If you're at the top of a hill, your wind is going to kind of overpower any type of thermal. When you're in the bottom, the wind's being blocked by the ridges.
Yeah.
So your thermals really, really work right there.
Yeah. There's times, you know, thermals are great. Like if you can master an area, where maybe there's a pinch point and thermals all kind of come together, and you have the right wind, and the wind speed, I think is also very important when you're maybe focusing on thermals at that point. Cause if you have, in my experiences, predominant wind or thermals can trump predominant wind if it's a light wind. But once it starts to, once that wind speed starts to pick up, the thermals may still be working, but then the predominant wind can trump the thermals and push that wind, you know, further down. It, you know, you may get away with a deer walking downwind of you and not catching your scent. But at the same time, this is just my experience. Once that wind speed picks up, then in the past, I've been busted more on higher wind speed days in a great thermal location.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. sorry. It really, to me, depends on the elevation that these ridges are actually getting, because if you're talking about, you know, 100 feet, couple hundred feet, you know, where the wind really is blocked by them, like that's the hub that I've been hunting where I shot two bucks at this year. It's pretty steep and it's pretty tall. So, and usually right there around 9:30 when the buck would be cruising it, trying to catch the first rise in thermals, your wind hasn't picked up like it will in the heat of the day. You know, in the middle of the afternoon, the wind's going to be the highest probably. And so, now if you're talking like where you're at, or, you know, a lot of the Midwestern stuff where it's not super, super high elevation.
Yeah.
You know, we're at the foothills of the Appalachian Mountain Range where I'm at. So we get some pretty decent elevation.
Yeah.
Midwest is going to be a little bit different. Yeah. You're not going to get quite the blockage that you'll get here.
Yeah.
So the other, it's dangerous. I mean, a lot of people hunt these, thermal, or a lot of people will not hunt a thermal hub because your wind can swirl so bad.
That was going to be my next question, actually. Like, how do you fight that?
So for me, I'll tell you. So it's different. I was trying to explain this to somebody the other day who is from the Midwest, where the majority of the hunting opportunity is bow hunting. If you want to hunt Iowa or Kansas or any, you have to be a bow hunter if you want to hunt the rut, for the most part.
Right.
I mean, you get a very short amount of time to even hunt with a firearm, so you have to be a bow hunter. In Alabama, our rifle season is the season, right? So we have from the beginning of November all the way through February the 10th to hunt with a rifle. And so I'm not talking about necessarily getting deer in bow range. I'm talking about getting deer in within 75 yards is kind of where I like inside of 75 yards with a gun because it's still close range. It's still, you feel like you got the deer in close, and there's a lot less room for error when you do that.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the times, you know, if I were trying to bow hunt a thermal hub, I might pick the point that might have the most sign on it where I feel like a deer, and I'd get up a little bit in elevation to where, you know, I can be in a little bit closer quarters. But I'm hunting literally in the dead center in the bottom of all these points coming down, because, and you know, when a deer comes in, and usually they're going to be within 100 yards when I see them, even if they do catch my wind or something like that, with a rifle, you have a little bit more ability to shoot them before they run off. And so that's kind of, I mean, honestly, that's a simple way of saying it, but, I have seen, people, my buddy Clayton Bond, I think he's been on your podcast before. He's from North or South Carolina. I can't remember which one. But he killed a really good mature deer in Kentucky this year in a thermal hub with his bow. I think it was at like 36 yards or 34 yards or something like that. But it was before the thermals started rising that he killed this deer. So when the thermals are falling still, a lot of times you can catch these bucks in the bottoms with you in these hubs like this. You can, because the hub works the same way, whether the thermals are rising or they're falling. A buck, a lot of times I find that in the bottoms of these, like where I'm hunting at, they'll be covered up with sign because the bucks are cruising the bottom at night when the thermals are all dropping. And so they're getting the same effect. They're coming to that one central location and they're able to smell what's been up at all on all those different ridges. And so you find a whole bunch of sign right there. And so first thing early in the morning or late in the evening, you have the opportunity to get one into bow range in these bottoms like this.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very interesting. And it's just another layer of trying to figure this whole thing out, man. I got some spots where, before the sun hits the bottom, it's money. But then once the sun hits the bottom, then we start to get those swirling winds that you talked about. The thermals aren't as accurate. The wind picks up and it just swirls so much. I really only hunt maybe to 7:30, 8 o'clock in those spots. Then I'll drop down and then maybe I'll move up on top of the ridge and do some of those things, or I just call it a hunt and then hit, you know, then I go back and hit. So when you're facing a scenario like that, are you moving around a lot, or are you just kind of sit there and just pray that the wind's not doing anything shifty?
Well, one of the things I always try to do, if there's any type of water that is, I want to do a video on this because I think it's harder to explain verbally and easier to explain visually. But if there's any water is going to affect thermals more than just about anything. So if you're in a creek that has running water in it, you can position yourself in such a way that even when the thermals start rising, the water, it could potentially rise away from where you think the deer are going to come from. Does that kind of make sense what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yep.
The thermals are going to push up off of the water. And if you're on a creek, it's going to push almost like, think of like dividing the sea.
Yeah.
Think of like Moses when he split the sea. So the thermals start rising and it goes out from the creek. And if you're on, if you're faced towards the direction that you think the deer are going to come from, if it's a creek crossing or something like that, when the, even when the thermals start rising, they're going to rise away, hopefully away from where you predict the deer are going to come from. So I use water a lot in my setup. In this spot where I killed two of these bucks at this year, I set up on the opposite side of the creek from where those deer were at. And I think that was the thing that killed both of those deer, is the thermals were definitely rising. They would have probably, they never had a clue out. Neither deer had a clue I was there. And the thermals were 100% rising, but they were rising away from that spot where the deer were, where the bucks were starting to cruise around. And so it gave me opportunity to get a shot. And it works the same way, you know, in flatter land. So when I've hunted swamps, a lot of the times I will set up on the opposite side of a of any type of water, standing water, from where I think the deer are going to come from. And it, it works in your advantage two different ways. So when the thermals rise, like I just said, it pushes back towards you. But when the thermals start to fall, they hit that water and they run with the water. They don't run across the water. They won't go across the water unless the wind pushes, unless the wind is stronger and it's pushing it that direction. Are you tracking that? Is that?
Yeah. Yep. I actually have my eyes closed and I'm trying to visualize what you're saying.
Milkweed has definitely been something for me that has helped me understand it better.
Yeah.
And just setting up and seeing if these theories are correct. So when you drop milkweed and the thermals are, let's say you drop milkweed late in the evening, right at last light, drop your milkweed, and probably what it's going to do is it's going to go towards wherever that water is. And then it's just going to either just suck down into the water and float away, or it's going to, if the water's flowing, it's probably going to flow, like float over the water with the direction of the water.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which protects you from a deer on the opposite side of that water being able to smell you. And obviously every single one of these scenarios is going to greatly depend on the wind direction.
Yeah.
If your wind is at your back, it's just going to blow your scent over the water.
Yeah.
But if you're setting up like you should, then, and hunting the wind, then it should already be at your face. So if the wind's overpowering thermals, then great. It's still at your face. You're still protected. But if the winds, if the thermals are overpowering the wind direction, which is very common late at night or late in the afternoon, wind starts to die down, your thermals are going to be at your back. But hopefully what you, what you're after is it just following that waterway.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I mean, going out and being able to read sign, read terrain, identify deer movement, all that stuff. If I could have a pair of glasses that I could see how air moves and thermals and wind, like see almost like little mini arrows that you see on maps sometimes that indicate wind direction. If some way there was a pair of glasses that I could put on and see that and see where, you know, like, color green meets color red and all these things, dude, that would be, you would be able to, it would click in your brain. And I think it would become so much easier for people to then understand how all this works and how a deer literally uses its nose to see, basically to see danger, and, or just, that's how they go about their life, and why trails are in a certain spot on a hill, or why a creek crossing is in a certain spot, and just all the, and why they come out of a, of a block of timber into an ag field the same way, or how they run, you know, running swamps and things like that. I think if once you can identify that, it just becomes, it would click for people. And I know what you're talking about with these levels, because the only thing I can think of is a lake. Okay. And I'm using water as a reference point here. The warm water stays to the top, and then there's a thermal level, right? Where there's almost this straight line. And then below this line, under this thermal level, is this extremely cold water, right? And air is doing the same thing. And there's been a couple times on some of these thermal hubs that you're talking about where I've dropped my milkweed, and I there's not a lot of wind this morning, and it just floats in one spot, right above the cold and right below that hot, that warm air. And it's almost like a tide. And I was getting busted. And I didn't know why. I'm like, man, there's no wind here. How am I getting busted way up there? Well, these thermals were coming in and out of this draw, and they basically, it was like a tide, and my scent was going up and then sucking back down and going up and sucking back down. And it was just clearing out this whole drainage. And I didn't even know it, because what I honestly needed was a little more wind to, you know, for the thermal to work properly. And so I ended up saying, man, this is not a good spot. I need to come back up off the ridge a little bit. And once I did that, I started having, you know, more options with deer. So yeah, man, thermals are crazy. That's the stuff I really geek out about. And that's the stuff that I really try to focus on, especially when I'm hunting like a really awesome terrain feature in the timber.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll tell you one thing that's going to, like, people are going to try it and they're going to be the same way that I was. Like, you think you got it figured out, and then you hunt on a cloudy day and you're like, frick.
No, this stuff makes sense. Parker McDonald's full of shit, man.
Yeah. I mean, and honestly, like, swirling winds, you know, bouncing off of ridges and even trees. Like, I find thermal hubs during the early season can really suck when the leaves are still on the trees, because the wind direction is just like bouncing off of everything. There's nothing, it's not going through. It's just swirling around. But a good visual example is kind of what you said about a lake. So visualize a lake early in the morning, before the sun comes up. There's a lot of fog. This fog will hover over that lake. So it hovers over that water. What happens? People say, oh, the fog's not burned off yet. Fog is thermals, right? Like, it is a visual representation of thermals. The sun comes out, it burns away the fog. It doesn't just make that fog go away. It just rises up. It just comes up because it's rising. That sun heats it up, rises up. You go out on a foggy or on a cloudy day, if it's cloudy and foggy, that fog will a lot of times just sit on the water all day long because the sun never caused it to rise. And I've seen that happen a whole bunch.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, like, if it's a cloudy day, I'm not planning on sitting in any type of thermal hub, because it's probably not going to produce anything. It could, if it does produce anything, it's not going to be on those ridges. It's going to be down low. It's going to be in the bottoms.
Right. That's crazy. So it's definitely something.
100% the best thing for people. Like, people who are just using powder and stuff like that, like, if you don't want to buy milkweed because it's trendy, or you don't want to go pick milkweed or whatever, like, get a cotton ball and pull off little pieces of cotton off of that and use that as your reference. Because having something like that doesn't just kind of dissipate like powder does, where you can actually see what it's doing, is huge. That's a big deal.
Yeah, that's a fact, man. Well, Parker, man, really appreciate you taking time out of your day. If you guys want to, especially if you're listening to this podcast and you're from the South, I mention this all the time on my podcast. I have very limited, I have no experience hunting the South. So Parker, It's one of the reasons why I brought Parker on the network is so I had someone relatable on the network who could speak on the South. So if you're from the South or you hunt in some of these terrain features like what he was talking about, and it's not just the South. I mean, it's really content for like these principles that are covered for really anywhere. You need to listen to the Southern Ground Hunting podcast and definitely give that a listen. And also, as it's hunting ground, it's Southern Ground Hunting on YouTube as well, right?
That's it.
Yep. Right. So, and then, you know, all the social places that, so highly recommend his podcast and check it out. And, Parker, man, good luck if you do get out hunting again. Thanks for your time. And, man, we'll chat when we chat.
Sounds good, man. I appreciate you having me on. I always enjoy it.
And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, another episode in the books. Huge shout out to Parker. Huge shout out, the biggest shout out to you guys. Everything that you guys do to support the Nine Fingers and support the network, man, I really appreciate that. Huge shout out to Hunt Stand, Lone Wolf, Wasp, Ozonics, Vortex, Exodus, and Excalibur. Man, I tell you what, I don't know, like, their support has helped. Is equally responsible for the, you know, having someone trust you enough to give you money to rep their brand. It means something to me and I appreciate that. So go check out those brands. And other than that, man, good vibes, right? It's that time of year where, and I don't want to like sound sappy, but it's that time of year where there are people out there who may not have family. They may not have the connection to happiness that you do. So extend that, reach out to someone. If you have a family member that maybe you haven't talked to in a while, you got bad blood, you know, you got beef between them there. There's no reason for it. You know, end it. And you can end it by being the bigger man or being the bigger person, forgiving them for, I don't know what I'm trying to say here is just, you know, this whole feeling of good vibes, man. That's what we need to do. We need to have send out good vibes. And that doesn't just mean send them out into the world like I've been talking about, but send them directly to a person, someone who is struggling this time of year, especially when this time of year is so focused around family. And the definition of family doesn't necessarily have to be it doesn't necessarily have to be blood, right? But a neighbor or anybody. So just do your part in humanity and just be a good person to all. And I'll tell you, man, that positive energy will definitely come back to you. So with all that said, I appreciate your time. Merry Christmas. We got another episode coming this week with Mark Kenyon. So stay tuned for that. And other than that, man, I hope everybody gets what they want in their stockings. And I don't know how they're going to fit 1,000 acres into a stocking, but that's what I'm wishing for. Merry Christmas. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.